Here's Tanagra on second down, throws a crossing route. Oh! Sindeni! Welcome to Nick Cross, Mr. Sindeni, as he rocks him around the midfield stripe. And he heard footsteps because he dropped the ball prior to that. Yeah, Nick Cross brings the hammer, and the Rams will get the ball back.
Growing the Game with Ballsy is a podcast dedicated to growing the game of football in Saskatchewan. Each week, Michael Ball will talk with Rider guests, but he'll also highlight amateur athletes, coaches, and builders in this province growing the game we love. Now, here's Ballsy.
Well, thanks for checking out the podcast, and thanks to my sponsors for making this podcast happen. Paul Waldo at Royal LePage in Regina. Get in the real estate game with the three-time Grey Cup champ by calling 306-502-5355. Face First Medical Aesthetics. Get birthday Botox at a discount. And guys, how about Brotox for you too? Above Gabbo's on Dewdney Avenue. Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. For grain hauling, grain marketing, and crop insurance, give Corey a call over there at Double Z Ag Sales in Weyburn. Mark Greshner Photography. Now, I can personally endorse this guy. Trust Mark to capture those big life moments. MarkGreshner.com is where you get more information. Riviere Ag Seeds, Southern Saskatchewan's premium certified seed grower, delivering homegrown certified durum, yellow peas, and chickpeas. Sasselex Football, building the stars of tomorrow today. And we start this podcast with our Coach of the Week for Pizza Huts in Saskatchewan. Thanks to the Concord Group of Companies for supporting football at the grassroots level here in Sasky. Our Coach of the Week is the strength and conditioning coach of the U of S Huskies, Joel Lipinski from Regina. All right, Joel, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you doing?
Doing good. Okay, so I was reading your bio, and it says there, unless it's a lie, and I don't think it is, you grew up playing catch in front of your house with your dad. Tell me about that, because when I read that, it put a smile on my face, because that's exactly what my son and I have done all our life since he was five. In fact, that's what I miss most about him being away in North Dakota. Can't play catch with him walking around the neighborhood.
And that's awesome. Yeah, well, no, thanks for asking me about that. Like, to be honest, it brings a smile to my face just thinking back about it, too. Man, my dad was my hero growing up. Like, he's honestly still my hero to this day. He played for the Rams, even got in a couple of preseason games with the Riders there, too. Mm-hmm. We just head out in front of the house and play for hours. Like, and one funny part I remember is I couldn't catch with my hands for a good while there while we were playing catch, and like probably at the beginning, you know, just eat passes off my chest and forearms, and my dad would throw nothing but heat. It definitely made me learn how to properly catch with my hands. I ended up moving to defensive back and linebacker at university, so I guess coming out of that, probably could have used a little bit more work in the yard here too, but to be honest, that's definitely where my love of my game was born, for sure.
That's what they say. DBs are just receivers that can't catch, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so you played with the Rams and St. Mary's, All-Canadian at both schools, MVP at St. Mary's. What made you a great player, Joel Lipinski, and what did you take from the playing surface into your current job?
Well, excuse me. I wouldn't say I was a great player by any stretch, but I know I appreciate the kind words. I would say any success I did have was definitely just due to my mentality that everything is just a means to the next step and almost a servant-like thought process. Like, there's this quote by my old DC, Gary Echeverry. I get carried with me all the time, and he would say the difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that successful people do the things that unsuccessful people don't like to do. However, the same things that unsuccessful people don't like to do is the same things that successful people don't like to do. The difference is just successful people do them. Mm-hmm. I got my son rolling up in here right now, too. He's 14 months old, just hanging out, so he might be a little bit in the background. But
that's okay.
I would say like that kind of thought process is definitely what led me to train as hard as I did, you know, meal prep every Sunday and kind of put the hours in the film room. And I definitely think that's led to my success as a strength coach and a business owner. I still spend my time reading every day. I have the hard conversations with my athletes and coaches that keep them accountable instead of taking the easy way out and avoiding them. I also think this leads me to be a good father and that, you know, I'll go downstairs and play blocks with my son instead of watching football on Sundays. I've just kind of learned that giving people the tools that they need to be successful, sometimes at the expense of myself, ends up kind of being my reward at the end of the day. And I've learned to kind of love that process and that servant mentality.
Yeah, it's awesome. Is it tough? Is it challenging to be in a high pressure job and also be a young father with a young family?
Yeah, that's kind of been, honestly, one of the hardest, transitions of my life. I mean, it's one of those things where I could put in, you know, 12 hours at the gym, and it was just Lee and I. It was one of those things where, you know, hey, I'll see you, you know, a few hours on the weekend and everything would be fine. But now just kind of having, I mean, you obviously know it's kind of interesting. And I think until you become a father, you don't even realize you can kind of love something that much. And so that's just thinking through COVID. I've definitely was able to be home during times that I wouldn't normally be home. And so just kind of understanding now all the things that I am missing, kind of not being here when I'm working all my hours here too. But again, it's kind of one of those things that it's lucky enough. I'm blessed that like I have a job that I absolutely love. And again, like working with so many men, young males, young females, who kind of are kind of men, just an extension of myself. And even just like you almost treat them as kind of like young kids that you can kind of like grow and blossom as well. And so just trying to make sure that I'm able to be here for my son and do the things that, again, I need to be a good father as well. So it's definitely been, that's been my biggest life transition here too. And just trying to still that work-life balance that everybody talks about. I still haven't figured that part out yet, but I'm trying.
Everybody tries to figure it. I'm still figuring it out, and I'm way older than you. Hey, you believe in a holistic approach to coaching, so I'm told. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, I guess with Ignite, we kind of treat everything like our, we have our basic four pillars that we try to encapsulate. So, you know, you have the mentality side of things, you have the movement side of things, you have the mindset side of things, and you have the nutrition side of things. So I think I said mindset twice and then recovery. So with that being said, we kind of just bring, lucky enough that we have a bunch of people that we are able to bring in. So with the mindset side, we have this Clint Meraz, who, again, you kind of know with this day and age, especially with COVID going on, and not even like males, females, everybody, kind of younger athletes with social media and all these things here too. Everybody's kind of dealing with, some mental health. So, and then also just make sure that they can kind of, play well when the game time comes again too. So we have people in that we're able to refer out for that side of things. From nutrition, you know, we have a dietitian on staff now too. Just again, that's a massive part of performance, so we try to make sure that athletes understand the importance of that, and we bring professionals in that kind of help where they need to get to. And then we kind of, and then from the recovery side, we have, you know, massage and physios that we work closely with as well, just to make sure athletes are performing all the prehab and rehab necessary in order to make sure they don't get injured, for one, and when they do get injured, they have a proper plan in place to get them back on the field as fast as possible. And then we handle kind of all the movement side. And from the movement side, yeah, we just make sure the athletes, again, can actually run properly, move properly. I find a thing that happens in the industry a lot is people just tend to like load dysfunction. And so we try to make sure we have the athlete pliable and injury resilient and actually moving properly before we end up loading the system. And I think that's something we've kind of done a pretty good job of.
What's the biggest change in your industry since, you know, maybe when you were a player getting into your industry and how it's evolved? You know, like, how has it changed? You talked about, you know, you talked about some of it there. Like, is it stretching? Is it footwork? Is it yoga? Like, what has changed in your industry?
Yeah, I think something that's just been awesome in the strength conditioning field is just the research that's gone into it. I think people have just become so enamored with human performance. And so, I mean, you have like, you know, you look back into the old textbooks and like Berkshansky and Bondarchuk and these guys. And when the old Soviet days, just the amount of money the Russians like threw into just human performance back in the day and just like the success that they kind of saw off it. And it kind of died out after kind of the Berlin Wall fell there a little bit. And then now I find that in North America, things have kind of started ramping back up. There's been a lot of studies done. And I think it's just kind of made people reassess what things have been kind of going on. So I think it's just the mentality, you know, people have always looked at, you know, say, well, we've always done it this way. And then I think now people are questioning, well, hey, is this actually the best way that we've been doing it? So it's just the quality of movement and then just kind of understanding that, you know, you can't just get in there and just grind for 2 hours. You have to have a plan. And then are you actually recovering properly to make sure that you're getting like as most adaptations possible? So I think that's the biggest part in our field here, too. It's just when you go someplace, okay, do you actually have a plan, or are you kind of constantly tracking to make sure that you're on course with that plan? And then do you have an ability from the art of coaching side of things to be able to transition if something's not going well? Because at the end of the day, everybody's an N of one. So you don't have, like, it's not a one program fits all kind of thing. So it's just like, okay, hey, how does this athlete respond? Because people have different types of muscle fibers. People have different types of abilities and movement qualities. So it's just trying to, like, bring out the best in those athletes and just kind of build it from there. So, I mean, even from a mobility standpoint too, like we're big into that functional range conditioning. So just, again, just understanding you got to kind of create tension and movement at end ranges in order to actually gain the capability and convince your nervous system to move there. Mm-hmm. And then again, you shouldn't end up loading the system if you can't properly move through that system. I mean, so many people out there doing overhead presses that don't actually have the shoulder mobility to get their arm overhead. And I mean, that compensation is going to end up kind of happening somewhere else, and it's going to inevitably lead to an injury. So I think that's something that we've changed a lot, that's changed a lot within the strength conditioning field, where it's just understanding, it's like, okay, hey, how do we make sure that the athlete's moving properly before we actually progressively load them?
Yeah, so like obviously, just to kind of Cole's note, you wouldn't, you know, a wide receiver might not train the same as your left tackle, obviously. Like, you'll have them do different things, right? Yeah, exactly.
Sure.
Is there a player or players that you kind of use as examples of work ethic that, you know, who have trained hard and transformed their bodies, where you're kind of like a proud parent? You talked earlier in the interview about, you know, being there and helping them blossom. Do you have a couple of examples or one that comes to mind?
To be honest, I so many of them. If you were like, honestly, even just every guy on the Husky staff, I mean Husky team here too. I hope everybody that comes in year one looks significantly different than they did in year five. But
look at a guy here. Can I stop you for one guy here? A local kid here in Regina. How about a Josh Haggerty type? There's a guy that you can't teach size. So you can't teach a guy that, you know, you can't coach tall and you can't coach running ability. But he seems to have bulked up and become more of a physical safety than I remember him when he was playing here in high school with Campbell. Obviously, he's older, but just maybe use him as an example.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah, obviously, big Campbell alumni too, so obviously that's a special place in my heart. But, no, Hegg's an absolute beauty. Like, I mean, he kind of came in, and I think just kind of the friends and just kind of the culture that kind of surrounded him when we kind of came in there too, and obviously when Scott took over the program. I use meathead as an endearing term, and he definitely became a massive meathead. And so, yeah, he's a guy that just kind of bought in. And, like, honestly, it's just one of those things where I think if you end up kind of sticking with the process and kind of go through the plan, he was a guy that just saw results and, again, just kind of end up getting excited with those results and just, again, kind of kept on working. And so he's an athlete, again, just bigger, faster, stronger, and he's still working. Again, obviously just worked with him today. And, he's a guy that, I mean, probably put on 20, 30 pounds. And, looking great, running around the field good. And, again, his remains fairly injury-free. So, he's definitely one of those success stories for sure.
I thought the Montreal Alouettes, they potentially got the steal of a draft with that, I think, sixth-round pick with Colton Claussen or whatever it was. But it's risky in the sense that here's a guy that, I mean, his leg looked like a slinky at the end of that playoff game. And I'm looking at it like, is he ever going to be able to play any kind of sports again? So they draft him without, you know, any eyeball test or anything because of COVID. But let's talk about Colton Claussen's recovery. How much were the Alouettes in contact with you and just your thoughts on his recovery and what a hard worker this kid is?
Yeah, Colton's obviously, he's a guy that has a special place in my heart too. We've been working with him since he's been in grade eight. I mean, if you go back and, again, if you want to talk about one of the bigger success stories, just go back and watch that kid in grade 12. The guy's probably running a 5.5 40 and, again, been carrying a few extra pounds on him as well. But he's one of those guys that, again, you have the conversation with him, which I know you have here too. He's just built a little bit different, just a little bit different mentality. Mm-hmm. He obviously had a phenomenal surgeon in Dr. Ernst. Was able to kind of get him right in that respect, working with Mitch Dahl as well, one of our physios. And getting him ready for his rehab process, just getting his mobility back in his ankle. And he's a guy where you just literally have to hold him back because he's just wanting to do more. But again, guy that's stuck with the plan. Like, we have a ton of videos on him too. Just, again, we're able to all the stuff we have access to right now in terms of just basic assessments, in terms of like what's his movement quality, like where does he start to have aberrations in his movement. And so we're able to kind of pinpoint where those are and, again, just build them back up. To be honest, I even have one of my phenomenal coaches on staff, like Graham Black, who's able to work with him a ton on his running and his ankle mobility as well. And just kind of having great people around me and then also just having an athlete with Colson Costa's work ethic. He's just, like I said, just built a little bit different. Just got to kind of continually pull him back. And there wasn't a question in my mind he would be back. He's one of those athletes where you just talk to him for 5 minutes and you know he's a little bit crazy, but at the same time, just an absolute beautiful human. And he's going to be, to be honest, if the CFL continues to run, which I'm sure it will, he's, I think, going to be a player in that league here for a while, and I think he's going to turn a lot of heads.
Well, you sure hope so, because he's a good, hardworking Canadian kid, like you said, 5'5", 5'5", 40 or whatever. We joke in yeah, grade 12, yeah. But the guy is a stud. He's the Swiss Army knife of the Huskies. You know, your job has become even a little more important here in COVID-19, especially for those guys like Claussen and Matlin Riley and Nick Daly, who didn't get a chance to go to, you know, those real, you know, combines and do all those things before the draft. You would have had to be on the other end helping them with their tape and their testing and all that stuff.
Yeah, one cool thing that we were able to do, and that's just kind of the nature of the facility that we're able to operate in right now too, we have that 90 yards by 65 yards on a turf downstairs in our facility as well, and so we were actually able to run a pro day for those guys. And so that was actually really cool. I mean, we were able to have the guys run 40s, do all the pro agilities, the L drills. We even did a couple of their basic like player testings as well. It was, I honestly talked to pretty much every GM in the CFL, just kind of asking me about those guys and being able to kind of put those videos out. I think hopefully helped those guys out a little bit. And again, it was just one thing. And we'd probably been working 5 days a week for 4.5, 5 months. So just so those guys could actually show off what they had, the work they'd been putting in, and again, obviously be rewarded for it with 5 of them getting drafted. So, yeah, I'm just super grateful it worked out for those guys, and I'm super excited for them to get onto the field here next year.
Last question for a young football player, guy or girl, listening to this podcast, listening to your interview, Joel. When should a football player start weight training? Because we know weight training is a big deal with football. We've kind of touched on it, but you don't want to start too early.
No, I mean, you got to think, like, I mean, if you, do the basic math in terms of force going into an athlete's spine, and everybody's kind of worried about those growth plates too. I mean, an athlete jumping off a 5 or 6 foot play structure is going to provide a lot more force and jarring into an athlete's system than a lot of weight training will. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing is you just, like, when it comes to weight training, you just don't want to end up kind of going into those heavy reps too early with an athlete. Just again, if you have an athlete kind of peak too early, you kind of end up stunting their potential in terms of where they get to when they get to that university ranks. But I mean, if you have a smart coach, I mean, the athlete can start weight training, and to be honest, as early as 8 or 9.
Yeah.
And just again, making sure that you have a proper plan. The athletes just worry about more movement quality, just so when the athlete does end up getting to me in the university ranks here too, they have those movement qualities and the proficiencies in order to actually go through the full range of the motion everywhere, and then you can just load the system and kind of have fun with it.
All right, lastly, Joel, just give a plug to your business here, because a lot of people, when I have a lot of guys on here from the Huskies, they swear by you and Ignite, so give your business the plug.
Yeah, well, I guess just, yeah, companies Ignite Athletics. Yeah, we try to just cater to all those four pillars of human performance. We do think we spend the time that we need, and we legitimately care about the athletes that do come into our facility. We find people don't really care what you know till they know that you care. And our coaches legitimately love what they do. They put the time into what they do. And I do feel that we're staying at the top part of our industry in terms of making sure that we're doing things the right way. Again, going to make sure you guys are completely injury resilient first. And then from there, then we'll load you up and make you as strong and fast as possible.
Helping the stars of tomorrow today, it's the strength and conditioning coach, Joel Lipinski of the U of S Huskies, our coach of the week. Thanks, Joel.
Appreciate you, Ballsy. Thanks.
How about this story? Tom Brady, a lucky charm? Now, he's been mildly successful in the NFL, and Boston had a great run with their other sports teams while Tom was in town. And now the Tampa Rays, of course, are in the World Series. So is Brady good luck? Someone tried to find out by looking at how successful the sports teams were in every city that Brady has lived. The results are very interesting and maybe a little spooky as we come up on Halloween. Now, when Terrific Tom was growing up in the Bay Area, San Francisco, Oakland, from 1977 to 1994, the 49ers drafted a guy by the name of Joe Montana and won 5 Super Bowls. The Oakland Raiders won 1, and the Oakland Athletics won a World Series. When Tom was at the University of Michigan from 1995 to 1999, the Red Wings won 3 Stanley Cups, and Brady's Michigan Wolverines won a national championship. And of course, Tom, as I said, mildly successful in the NFL. When he was there from 2001 to 2019, the Patriots won 6 Super Bowls, the Red Sox won 4 World Series, and the Celtics won an NBA championship, and the Bruins won a Stanley Cup final in 2001. And in this past year, In addition to the Rays playing in their second World Series, the Tampa Lightning have won the Stanley Cup. And the Buccaneers, the schedule is lining up favorably for them, so they could be a force in the NFC. Lastly, I want to get on my soapbox a bit and rant about what's going on with high school athletics. Now, I can appreciate our leaders, both the political and medical kind, are looking out for kids' safety by restricting where they can get COVID. However, as I said before many times, quit pissing on me and tell me it's raining. You can't catch it any more in a football field than you can in a crowded classroom. We heard on an earlier installment here of Growing the Game with Ballsy that officials wanted to stop interlocking school mingling that would come with high school football. Really? Why can the RMF run Adam, Pee-wee, and Bantam games flawlessly with integration among school kids? Quit picking and choosing where we can get COVID-19. Now, the Saskatchewan High School Athletic Association apparently has no intention of moving football to the spring because apparently it would overlap with those spring sports and harm participation in those sports. How about we let the kids and parents decide what they want to play? And logistically, track athletes will not throw a javelin over the stands into the football field. And if they do, they should be in the friggin' Olympics. Grade 12 students last year didn't get a grad, and there was little appetite to help those kids and families out until the 11th hour when decision makers were pushed. And I know this because I was one of the ones pushing them, trying to organize a big grad celebration for all the schools. But we ran into roadblocks at every turn. As it relates to football this year, grade 12 is very important. Some kids, it's the last chance they'll ever get to play the sport competitively. For those that want to play at the next level, there are challenges too. Rosters right now are over capacity both in the junior and university ranks because of COVID. Players can't go on recruiting visits or camps out of province, and no out-of-province representatives from schools can come into our province, making it very difficult to get recruited. Kids need the game action and game film that would come from a spring season. Now, at the school level, they won't readily admit it, but they're worried about lawsuits. Well, easy solution. Get parents and players to sign a waiver, clearing anybody of any wrongdoing if they play and catch COVID. And for this season, let the RMF run the Spring League as a high school football league. They already know how to do it, and they do it well. And help them out by letting them use your equipment. Put the damn egos aside for the kids. Somebody sack up, get a spine, and get this done. We have time on our side. Let's not squander it. What's the old saying? Don't waste a crisis. Mental health is important too. Let's not forget about that. These kids, especially these football guys, I can speak to them, guys and girls. They pour blood, sweat, and tears all year round to get ready to play their sport. And for grade 12 students, let's not let them down like we did last June with grads. Come on, people. Be better.
This has been Growing the Game with Ballsy. If you have a football story you'd like to share to help us grow the game, email Michael Ball at mball@harvardbroadcasting.com. Ballsy can be heard weekdays in Regina on 104.9 The Wolf Morning Show and during Saskatchewan Roughriders and U of R Rams broadcasts on 620 CKRM.